Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you for another hour. It is Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. Our thanks to Kyle Lindstedt. If you missed any of that interview about a big event, the Sunrise Hoop Fest coming up this weekend, the Wichita Hoop Fest featuring Sunrise Christian and a ton of great young basketball players, you can go back on the Odyssey app and find all the details, get his take on Wichita State. The Shockers playing tonight, says they need to muck it up a little bit. Well, I agree. I think that's going to be a ticket for Wichita State and a lot of college basketball teams, honestly. Just get in there and get nasty. That's always been the strength of the Shockers. And, you know, you see it at times, but, you know, finding that identity again would go a long way. They play tonight. Look, it's conference tournament or bust for the Shockers. Would sure like to see them play better. They played pretty good last time out in a loss, though, to North Texas. We also get K-State tonight. K-State's playing great, Tommy. They're looking fantastic right now. They're finally playing to the level we thought they might play when this season started, when we saw this roster come together. Let's talk about these two games real quick because we have Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, joining in our next segment. We'll start with the Cats at Arizona State. It's a good opportunity for them. Arizona State's only 3-7 in the league. But they're pretty nicely regarded. They'd be kind of a bubble-ish team right now, maybe just on the outside looking in. Based on net rankings, not enough wins so far to be in. But I only say that to use it as a gauge of, is this team pretty good? And I think they're pretty good, right? They're kind of right there.
Yeah,
they're higher in the net than Kansas State is, and Kansas State has to go to their place for a late night game. This is an opportunity for a nice quality win for the Cats.
Here's the thing about Kansas State. I don't know if you saw this or not, but you know, Bart Torvik, the analytics, one of the analytics websites, has Kansas State as the number one team in the country over the last three games. The way that they've played over the last three games, their offense ranks 14th nationally. And their defense ranks third nationally over the stretch of the last three games. And then over the last six games, if you go back even further than that, they rank 10th nationally. And that's when you go back to the close call against KU, when they played Texas Tech, when they played Baylor. I think we kind of saw them starting to turn a corner a little bit in those games. But then in the last three, they have absolutely skyrocketed when they played Oklahoma State, of course, on the road against Iowa State. And they've got a big test tonight against Arizona State on the road in Tempe. So according to, you know, some of these analytics, they are the hottest team in America right now.
I mean, I believe it. Look, I are right now, right? And that's a short
right
window.
Right now, over the last three games, they are the number one team in college basketball.
But you and we look, we can take that back a little ways, because I think we saw a glimpse of it in the second half against Kansas. I keep using that as that point, but that was it. It was like, there it is. Like there it is. And again, like, this roster has always seemed to fit together on paper well. They have players that should complement each other. You know, how deep they are, I'm not sure. But if they get the best of these players they brought in, most notably McDaniel, Hawkins in the proper role, right? The Joneses. Yeah. And then they, you know, Gasson's been better, I think, than anybody would have imagined. It's all right there for them. And I tell people that and they roll their eyes. And I'm like, that's not even like trying to be overly optimistic, which I do like to be optimistic. That's just the reality. And I'm glad to hear that about an analytics site that says the same thing.
Yeah.
Because I do think this team at its best is still a team that belongs in the top half of the Big 12 at worst. Now, they just haven't played that way at all up until recently, right? Remember, it took a long, long, long time for this team to even have a quality win. Remember that they got smashed by Wichita State, right? And they had all these losses. They got smashed by St. John's. St. John's is pretty good. But they didn't have anything to hang their hat on. Well, now they do. And maybe it's as simple as Jerome Tang is doing what we all thought before a few months ago he was the best at doing, which is a relationship guy and getting the best of players because they weren't bought in early and they are now. And it's like, okay, now let's start this season. Now, here we go. You got to probably win 8 of your last 10, and you'd have a legitimate case to be an at-large team.
What's wild is you think back to early January, and I know you were at this game when Houston absolutely smacked the crap out of Kansas State at home in Bramlage, up and down the court. Things were down bad at that point. The vibes were not good in Manhattan. You and I were having conversations on this show about what does the future look like for Jerome Tang? And our K-State insider, Tim Fitzgerald, was talking about how even if Kansas State wanted to move on from him, they couldn't afford to do that. Like, that's how bad things were a month ago in Manhattan. And since that time, I don't think anybody predicted that there would be this kind of turnaround. I think people thought that there would be some improvement, hopefully, that they would be able to find their footing a little bit and get some wins against teams like Oklahoma State, maybe West Virginia in that stretch. But I don't think anybody saw a 19-point road win in Ames, Iowa on the bingo card. I don't think anybody saw that. I don't think anybody saw, you know, just kind of the way I know you did, but just
bet it.
I know you bet it, but I don't think it. I thought that they would cover. I certainly didn't think that they would win. But at the end of the day, I don't think anybody, probably yourself included, sitting inside Bramlage Coliseum in that early January day, thought that they would see such a turnaround from the Wildcats after they got drubbed by Houston at home.
No, I did. And it wasn't like Arizona. I mean, Iowa State wasn't the light bulb moment. It wasn't. It was a variety. It could have been a variety.
I think
of places.
It was them hanging within 10 to Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse. I think
I think especially in the set. What was, let me just pull it up. The score in the second half that, it was 45-45 in the second half. Like, they were right there. And that's where it was like, okay. Because early on in that game, remember, it looked like they were going to get just smashed, and they didn't.
I think the Baylor game was a part of it too. Like, they very
absolutely
easily
there
could have
wasn't
beat Baylor.
Anything. Yep, there wasn't anything we saw in the Baylor game that was anything remotely close to what we were seeing in other games. And there are going to be moments, probably for them, where they look back and are like the TCU and the Tech games for them. You're like, man, like just. Yes, it was a product of not playing well and buying in, but they had some bad luck in there. Maybe it turns. This is going to be a really good gauge of it tonight. I don't expect, the path for them is long, right? You have to basically win against Arizona State, BYU, Utah, well, Arizona State twice, UCF, Colorado, Cincinnati. You can't really stumble there unless you want to win 2 of 3 from Kansas, Arizona, and Iowa State again. I think if they win one of those three and don't lose any of the others, I think this team would be in the NCAA tournament. That's how crazy this is. And it's a symptom of the Big 12 more than anything else. But that could be their path. And what's not crazy, Tommy, as we saw over the weekend, if they just play their best game, they could absolutely do that. Absolutely. Is it too much to ask of a college basketball team? Probably. Probably so. College basketball is not that consistent. We don't ever see that really in college basketball. We certainly, I think it would be a difficult task to ask a team who has been so wildly inconsistent this year. But is it inconsistent, or is it for most of the season, they were not bought in and didn't play well, and now they're clicking? And I think that's what we'll find out with games like this. Pretty short turnaround, late night game in the desert. Do we carry over this momentum? Because if so, I think that's the point where you can say, all right, like they're back.
Well,
they're back.
Then you're talking about Sunflower Showdown Part 2 in Bramlage this weekend.
And who knows?
And who knows? I mean, Kansas will have the benefit of they played last night, so you get a long time off, you get to rest and whatever, and then it's just a short road trip over to Manhattan. So they'll have the benefit of that, where Kansas State is traveling back from Tempe after tonight's game and getting ready. But you know what? I think it's going to be the way that Kansas State is trending upwards. The Jayhawks absolutely cannot look past Kansas State this weekend. I don't think they're going to, but they absolutely can't do that. I think it's going to be a great matchup. And I think tonight's game, because Arizona State has got some guys too, I think that's going to be a challenge for Kansas State as well. I think that really at the end of the day, I don't have a crystal ball, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit if when we get to March, if we're talking about Kansas State potentially as a bubble team, a team that the committee is looking at, and like, does their resume stand up enough to be able to put them in to the NCAA tournament? Now, at this point right now, today, like, they still have a losing record. Like, they're 10-11, right? So they've got a long ways to go. But man, it wouldn't shock me if we get to the end of the regular season into the Big 12 tournament, if they make some noise in that tournament, where we could be potentially talking about them as a fringy bubble NCAA tournament team.
And you can talk all day long about how difficult the Big 12 is and how that whatever. It's also the reason you've got a path here, right? It's the sole reason why they still have a chance, because every game they play down the stretch essentially is quality. And I'm telling you, if it's 8-2, I think they're in. If it's 7-3, that's got to be at worst. And then maybe they'd need to win a game or two in the conference tournament. But it is there. And if they play the way that they have played lately, it's not even out of the realm of possibility. Again, is it likely a college basketball team can deliver that kind of consistency? That's a big ask, but we'll see tonight. When we come back, we'll get to some Chiefs talk. Dan Israel from the Big Easy joins us next. Don't go away.
Take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are happy to be joined by our Chiefs insider, Dan Israel, from New Orleans, with his fancy Super Bowl hat on and the festivities down there. Now, Dan, is this your first foray? Like, what is your experience with New Orleans Super Bowls?
Other than watching the last one where the lights went out, I've never worked a Super Bowl here. Chiefs or otherwise, obviously, but Chiefs did play here in Tulane in Super Bowl IV before my time. Interestingly, though, they are tied with South Florida for the most Super Bowls, and it's not a close second.
No.
South Florida and New Orleans have 11, and the next guy has like 5, I think, which is, it's just an interesting city to do it in. The nice thing about it is it's a very small footprint. I think you can't walk from one venue to another in excess of 20 minutes. So that part's nice, but security is just, it's really tough. We're literally, the Chiefs are staying in the French Quarter, and there's just people everywhere, man. People in cars. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like just with the atmosphere, and we know, like, with every Super Bowl, you've got, just this crazy circus atmosphere. And I'm sure that in a area where the footprint is so small, that circus and that atmosphere is even, heightened. I know that last night was all the kickoff ceremonies and everything for opening night down in New Orleans. Where do you see the preparations at right now for the team?
Most of the prep for the game itself took place last week. They do all the install. They do all the real heavy lifting for the Super Bowl itself. So this week they do practice every day, and they'll walk through, they'll do some run throughs, they'll tweak things, you know, they'll just, it's like an extra week of rehearsing the game plan that was put in last week, something you don't normally usually get. But, you know, they'll do some, you know, maintenance lifting, no real intense workout stuff this week. The demands of this week on players and coaches is unreal. There's nothing like it. I mean, the schedule is every half an hour something else is happening. And then you have so much immediate tension. Like last night, the Chiefs went on second. It was 8:45 before they even went on the stage. And so they get home probably after their bust back home. They're probably here about 11 o'clock and, you know, curfews at midnight. So there's just not a lot of time for them to move around. It's a very unusual schedule that you only see at the Super Bowl. And that's what makes it so hard not to succumb to the spectacle of it, you know, to get overwhelmed with the game. If you haven't been here before and you don't know what to expect, it's a little overwhelming.
Well, and they've been there. Both these teams have been there, though.
They're
a couple of years ago. So
Most of the players.
I've sort of contended like this will kind of be all about the business of this football game, which will be great for the, you know, for the rest of us because they're really locked in. Mm-hmm. I think both teams, Dan, could attack this game about 100 different ways. It's part of what makes these teams so good. They're both good on offense. They're both good on defense, and they're both versatile on both of those, you know, levels. So what mm-hmm. do you think the Chiefs are hoping to achieve offensively and defensively in this Super Bowl?
Well, I'll tell you, if I could is speak a little about the Eagles first, because I really do think they're a good team. I think if you look at the last four Super Bowls, you know, you got to throw Tampa Bay out there a little bit just with the injuries to the tackles. It was just too much to overcome. But the other four Super Bowls this one will include, this is a very good team. It may be the best team we've played yet. And I think one of the things the Eagles have been living off of is explosive plays. Saquon Barkley has like seven carries of 60 yards or more. I mean, it's going to be a tough haul for the Chiefs defense. So I really think from a defensive standpoint, man, the Chiefs defensive line, the Chiefs linebackers are going to have to figure out a way. If bend and don't break ever applied, it would be this week against Saquon Barkley. Because if you can keep him from scoring or you just keep those explosive plays from happening, I really, really feel like the Chiefs, you know, if you said to me, Jacob, if you asked me if Chiefs hold Saquon Barkley to 100 yards, did they win? I would say yes, they would. You can't let him get 160 or 70 yards, which he can do. So I think that's the first aspect of all of this. The other thing the Eagles are really good at is giveaway takeaway. So, you know, ball security, always important, but in games like this, it could be a difference maker.
You know what I find really interesting on the Saquon Barkley point, Dan, is that we know how good this season the Chiefs have been in stopping the run. A lot of teams, when they are deploying their running game, it's a ball control type thing. They want to keep the ball. They want to keep possession. They want to run the clock. They want to do all those different things. And even though Saquon Barkley has been so incredible, that's not the way that the Eagles deploy their run game. Like it is the explosive play in the same kind of way that we see a lot of teams passing the football. That's how they use Saquon. I mean, like even going back to the NFC Championship game, I mean, he was like one play into the end zone to kick off that game. That's the way that they utilize it. So how do you think with the way that the Chiefs run defense has been so successful in stopping lead backs, are they going to have to change the way they approach Saquon Barkley, knowing that it's a little bit of a different mentality that the Eagles have?
Yeah, and to your point, you know, the Eagles have had 45 sacks on Hurts. How is that for a running team?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just goes to show that you're getting chunk yards. You're not doing this 3, 4, 5 yards at a time. I think the biggest thing for the Chiefs defense is going to be to really have that lane integrity, you know, you just can't get caught. You cannot let an Eagles offensive lineman push you into a spot that you shouldn't be in. And I know that sounds overly simplistic, but engaging, you know, a lot of times a defensive line or a linebacker, their biggest mistake is getting engaged early with the offensive line. You can't do that with the Eagles because Saquon Barkley is so good at reading. You've got to just kind of be patient and then wait for him to make his move and then make yours and hope you're fast enough to get him because he's a quick guy. That would be my take on it. I'd love to actually ask that to Steve Spagnuolo because I think it's a great question.
Well, their corners are better tacklers than, you know, than what we've seen the Eagles play. I think the Eagles are going to have to beat them through the air, probably. Jalen Hurts running the ball, Dan, is what worries me. Like, he looked healthy in the Washington game. I think that's going to be the challenge. You know, if we go all the way back with the Chiefs, running quarterbacks and tight ends can hurt them, and the Eagles have a running quarterback with a tight end that's going well right now. I think you just kind of have to hope and count on everybody doing their job, and then what do you do to stop that? Because I envision like Jalen Hurts long run plays is what could really get the Chiefs in some trouble in this game defensively.
Yeah, you know, and he hasn't done that as much this season as he has prior, but, you know, he had that banged up knee, and that's healed. And so, and you got to expect on this stage where it all matters, you know, they're going to do everything they can. There's no next week to play for. You can recover in the month of March, April, May, and June. So I feel like you're right. That'll be a factor. And their tight end's really good, man. You know, it's just hard to – they're a very good team. They're a very well-rounded team. I think you got to spy Hurts to some level. You got to have a guy who says, all right, Barkley's gone left. I've got to stay over here and kind of watch, you know, Hurts. And then they just have to – I don't really think the Eagles – I don't know if they could beat us through the air or not, if that's all it is. It has to be a combination of those explosive plays and you know, some air movement. But again, they give it up 45 sacks. I mean, that's a lot, man. So if they can get pressure on Hurts, hopefully contain him somewhat, you know, the Chiefs can do this. The Chiefs defense is good enough to win this game. I just think it's going to come down to one of those who made the fewest mistakes.
I always like getting your insight, Dan, on the mindset of some players coming into games. And I think for me, at least leading up to the Super Bowl, there's one player that continues to come into mind, and that's DeAndre Hopkins. And I know that he's talked in opening night and even leading up to what this means for him being able to play in his first Super Bowl. And this is a guy that, you know, is a future Hall of Famer and has done so many amazing things in his career, but he can get a ring with the Kansas City Chiefs. What have you seen as far as his mindset and his energy heading into this game?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, in the Texans game, it broke his streak of consecutive catches, and he didn't get any catches at all, and he targets at all, if I remember right. And so there was a concern of mine how he would handle that, a guy who's used to being the lead. He's used to being the number one guy, you know, and now he's not even an active player in a playoff game. But he was so focused, man, and these guys, you know, it just didn't get to him. It's the process. It's the way, and he is bought into this Chiefs, you know, locker room, and I really love that because he's been such a good leader with that. It was interesting though last night, if you watch the first 15 minutes of the guys coming up on stage, all the guys that had not been there, Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, all had smiles you couldn't wipe off their faces. You know, it's like these guys, look at Hopkins, has been in the league for over a decade, and he's just now getting to taste that and experience that. That's a really cool thing. And there's a number of guys. Samaje Perine is another one. You know, I just think it's amazing what these guys have kind of endured in their careers, and now they finally get to see this.
So on the offensive side then, Dan Israel, executive producer of Chiefs Radio Network, our Chiefs insider here in New Orleans. On the offensive side, the Chiefs can kind of just do what they've been doing, right? Trust the line enough to let Mahomes read it. But it feels like, again, ball control through a short passing game. I don't know that I like see Kareem Hunt with 20 carries or anything like that in this game. I think you put the ball in Mahomes' hands, and now with all his weapons, you just sort of let them go. course, the Eagles do bring that pressure up the middle, which is always a challenge for any quarterback. But don't you start there if you're Kansas City?
I think so. You know, I don't want to see you dance with the one that brung you, because that's not the way Coach Reed kind of runs the offense. He's always tweaking, like, you know, we had Juju Smith-Schuster as a stud in the AFC Championship game. So I think you'll see something special, whether that's, you know, I don't think it'll be too crazy. I don't think you see Carson Steele out there running the ball up and down the field, but, you know, you're going to see probably some kind of modified Kareem Hunt, Pacheco, Samaji kind of, you know, role playing there between that committee. And then, you know, who'll come out? I mean, I'd love to see Hopkins really be the guy, you know, Hopkins and Hollywood.
Makes sense.
It would be fun, and it would be a storyline, you know, for us in the media. That's, we look for those things. But, you know, I fully expect Worthy will play a factor in this too, just like he always does. I just don't think it'll be – you won't see a completely new Chiefs offense, but there'll be some kind of wrinkle in there. You go, oh, I'll never forget the last time we played the Eagles. Coach had identified that two players, when they transitioned from it was a cornerback and a safety, and when they transitioned a wide receiver between them, they would look – physically turn their heads and look at each other. And so the play was for us, when they looked at each other, to turn our receiver around. You know, as soon as they went, and then when they looked back, he was gone. And it was like, that's genius. That's just genius. So he's going to find those kinds of things, and he's going to exploit those. And that one, we got Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney for two touchdowns each on that same play. So I feel like, you know, those wrinkles that'll be in there will be really significant. And they may save him till the third quarter. I mean, that's the way they kind of play these things. And I just think one thing, this, you know, I always feel like you never know at the Super Bowl when the AFC plays the NFC, you know, they really match up. And I feel like this is going to be an exciting one, man.
You mentioned a moment ago storylines that the media loves to talk about. Opening night festivities last night, Travis Kelce says he has no plans to retire. And that's, I think, a little surprising, just with the narrative that's been built, you know, over not even this year, but even the last couple of years. Were you surprised to hear that from him? That it, you know, sounds like he said that in the next 3 years.
With that veracity,
for sure.
Yeah,
I was a little bit surprised.
I would have expected more, like, "Hey, look, I need to get to the off season, but I don't want to retire. I mean, I don't feel like retiring yet." I thought it was interesting. Somebody said behind the scenes, you know, well, I thought he was going to propose to Taylor Swift. Is like, what do those two things have to do with one another? You know, everybody's written this narrative, and it's got to kind of flow just the way the script is. But yeah, you know, and you look the way he played this year, and you almost have to say he slowed down, but he was still effective in a lot of ways.
He was. They didn't have anybody. Like, he could, what was he supposed to do? Like,
but hey, he made that catch in the divisional round, and he had that wide open space in front of him. And man, he was, to quote Chris Berman, rumbling, bumbling, stumbling. Like, he's not as quick as he was.
No, that the whole, you know, catch it and go the other direction is starting to get to him. He slips out, or he does. But here's the thing. He's such a savvy player and clutch player. You know, he reads defenses so well. And when you just absolutely have to have, he's your go-to guy. And I don't see that changing. And look, if they win, you think he's going to not – he's going to want to write a fourth one in the books. You know it. It's just, it's the goal of every season. I know people think that's cocky, but it's the goal of every season to win a Super Bowl. No team goes into a season and says, "Yeah, we won it last year. Let's give someone else a try." You know, no. Every year they're trying to win a Super Bowl. So if they win it, I just think you'll hear it from the stage.
Well, look, I mean, I think you made it pretty clear last night. I mean, I don't think you're that emphatic. I think there's this narrative that he doesn't have it anymore. Yes, he does. He's still really good. Is it different than it was 2 years ago? Maybe. But, you know, there's circumstances to every season. If he still loves it that much, he can make the Chiefs better. You know, I think that's really interesting. The other thing, and we can give you a 1 minute monologue here, Dan. The other thing he said that I thought was funny, he was asked an opportunity to ask the media, and he asked, why are you leaning into the ref thing? What does Dan Israel think of the ref thing?
But it got so tired. And some of the big names that were leaning into it was like, what are you thinking? The Chiefs are the third most penalized team in the league. And I know even how the empirical evidence so doesn't support this. Plus, I just don't think people have an understanding of just what the league is like. You could not have a con or a conspiracy like this without somebody leaking something, you know. But nevertheless, I've been telling people, hey, I just send my $25 in each week and hope it goes to good.
Hey, there you go. And look, just if you could just, that's why we have you here. This year is to let us know what, you know, what's the script, what can we expect in the Super Bowl. Makes us all look smarter, so we appreciate it. Dan, I know you guys have so much coming up on the network. It's going to be a blast. We'll have pre and post game coverage of it. Enjoy another one. History on the line. I think this is going to be an incredible football game. I got the same energy to me as that Bills Chiefs game did in the AFC Championship. This should be a blast on Sunday.
No, I agree with you. I mean, we're hoping for a great broadcast. We're going on. We're hoping to get Tom Brady on. I think it's a very, very low percentage just because, you know, the demands of his time are intense. But we put in an ask pretty long ago. So hoping to find that out this week. But I agree with you. The game itself, I think, is going to be an exciting game. I think, you know, one thing, whether you become a Chiefs fan or you've bought into the Chiefs, you're tired of them already, you know. They're entertaining, man. I mean, it's good football. It's quality football, and it's entertaining. And I don't know what more you can want from some of these national games. I mean, the AFC Championship game was the second highest watched game ever. And that kind of stuff goes to show it's good football.
Dan, enjoy the ride. We appreciate it.
You got it. Go Chiefs.
By the way, Travis Kelce, fifth in the league in receiving yards this year, 3 catches shy of 100. Give me a break. We're coming right back with more Sports Daily right after this.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here. It is all Brockton Caster. We appreciate Dan Israel for stopping by. Go back and listen on the Odyssey app. If you want to win some HTO today, you can do that right now. Get a free iced tea, a free hot or iced coffee drink from HTO. You can get one of each to be used at different times at any of the Wichita locations, east or west, or in Derby. All you got to do to win is text the keyword T to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody, as we come back in. Yeah, the Travis Kelce thing. I wondered if it was just time because he's 35 years old. He's got a lot going on. Sure doesn't sound like a guy, and that's the only part of last night I've had a chance to take in, by the way, is the Kelce stuff. I've got to dig through all that sound later today, but that sure doesn't sound like or seem like, Tommy, a guy who is ready to be done playing football. And for all of those he's lost a step people, like I said this right before we went to the air, he was fifth in the league, fifth among tight ends and receiving yards this year. He almost had 100 catches. And that's when they didn't have anybody else to catch the ball for a little while in this season, a stretch of time in this season where he was being targeted by defenses, obviously. Like, if he still wants to play, he's fine. How long did Tony Gonzalez play? Like, tight ends, they don't rely on their speed and explosiveness to be effective, right? If you can still block and you're a really smart player, you can play that position. So that's great news for Chiefs fans. Probably bad news for everybody else if he really does play two or three more years.
Yeah, I actually felt like when you want to talk about struggles, I felt like he struggled more last season than he did this season. He had the drops last season, and everybody did on that team. Like, that was just kind of a symptom of the Chiefs season last year. And yeah, he might be a tick slower. He might be a little older, you know, all of that. But I felt like he actually performed at a higher level this year than he did last year, for sure. I'm not surprised by this. I do think that we want to try to craft this like narrative and storyline that, you know, they win three in a row potentially, and then he rides off into the sunset, you know, with Taylor Swift, and then he goes and he does movies and he does TV shows and they live happily ever after and all of that. And what we forget in all of this is that Travis Kelce's a football player. Like, that's what he is. That's what he's always been. He's always done that. And sure, he has set himself up really well for the future, and whatever those future endeavors look like for him in entertainment or business or whatever it is, all the above, that's great. But I think he also knows once you hang that up, there's no coming back. And that's been his identity for so long. And I think, you know, if I were him, I'm thinking to myself, man, how long can we keep this going? Like, can we stretch this out even longer? And I think that's why it's always been so surprising to me that there's been this conversation about him retiring and Andy Reid retiring and like all of this, because it's what they know, it's what they do. And why walk away from a good thing?
It's for sure. And they love it and they're still good at it. I think, you know, for Kelce, and this is different even than Andy Reid, and maybe Chris Jones eventually falls into this conversation. It's so unique, the sports. It's upside down then for the rest of us. Your prime comes at the very beginning. Only, if you're lucky, 10 years, and then it's gone. And then you don't ever get that back. Like, for the rest of us, you start at the bottom and you work your way up for the rest of your career. And so you that first 10 years, you're kind of grinding it out, and we all hope. And then the next 20 or 30 can be the glory years of our careers, right? You go to pro sports and it's like the first 10, and then it's all downhill from there. And you never get to do that again. Like, once you're done as an athlete, like, that's it. You can do something else in the field. You can coach. You can do whatever. You can be an analyst. You can talk about it on TV. But that's it. And I would imagine he can have conversations with his brother, who is thriving in the media industry, who probably, if I had to guess, misses playing football a great deal. And so, yeah, if he wants to play, go for it. Because, you know, he's got a chance to be the GOAT if he continues to do it. Right now, it's a conversation between he and Tony Gonzalez and Rob Gronkowski, probably. He plays 3 or 4 more years, it may not be a conversation. It may be a slam dunk, no doubt about it. That probably matters. He has a lot going on, but he's handling it fine. Anybody out there doesn't think he's handling all this fine? He's a game show host. He's dating the biggest celebrity in the world. And he's still a star tight end in the NFL, and he seems to be doing just fine.
I think you can also point to what the Chiefs have done potentially for the future at tight end, which really, like, I don't think you look at their roster and you're like, all right, we feel good if Travis Kelce walks away. Noah Gray, I think, is a fine backup tight end. He had a stretch of games where he played pretty well.
You asked me if he was the future. And yeah, maybe. The future.
but they also, you know, went out and drafted a tight end who's not ready to take over. Like, I think that if the Chiefs had really felt like Travis Kelce was walking away anytime soon, they would have been a little bit more aggressive in figuring out what the future without him looks like. And I don't think that they've done that, because I don't think that they're ready to hand the keys over to Noah Gray or anybody else.
No, I don't think they need to, but I do think they were aggressive in, they've drafted receivers all over the place. They brought in Hollywood Brown.
But I'm talking about specifically tight end. Like,
well, you can't replace him.
What I'm saying is that I think that we could have gathered some clues based on what they did at that position to sort of point to or indicate what the future was for Travis Kelce. And I don't think that any of the moves that they've made at that position would lead me to believe that they would be expecting Travis Kelce to walk away anytime soon.
I don't think they know. So here's what I think. You'll never replace Travis Kelce. To say who is replacing or the next Travis Kelce is foolish. It'll never happen. I think you just do different things on offense than you've been able to do with Kelce for so long. So I think that's some of where the Chiefs have attacked pass catchers in general. But I mean, there's never been any indication. Travis Kelce's never said anything. His teammates have never said anything. Nobody has ever given us an indication that he's at the end of his career. Never. Not that I can remember. It's just people assuming, because he's got so much going on, that he's ready to be done playing football. And then you hear what, and I lied, I did hear a little bit of Xavier Worthy. I've just seen a few snippets this morning. You hear him talk about what it's like having Travis Kelce as a teammate. You see Adam Teicher's great inside story going into talking to teammates throughout Kelce's history, and some of the stories, how he intentionally I don't remember if it was Charcandrick West. Somebody was late because of traffic to a meeting, which is not okay in the Chiefs building. And Kelce said, you'll be fine. Waited for him at the hotel and was late with him. So he didn't have to be late by himself to help his team. Like, you hear that kind of stuff. I'm like, why would this guy ever want to stop playing football? I think you're going to have to put him in a wheelbarrow and carry him off the field. Dude loves football as much as anybody's ever loved football. So I was glad to hear him say that, because I'm not ready for him to be done either. I think he's one of the more entertaining players in football and personalities. Much more on the Chiefs as we make our way through. Tommy, real quick, let's get a look at the Shockers tonight. Charlotte is the opponent, which is good news, I suppose, because that's the only team in the American Athletic Conference through eight games that they've had a win against. I mean,
I shouldn't laugh, but
just being honest here, yeah. It's on the road. I will say they played a good game against North Texas, couldn't get it done at the end, but at least we're seeing that, and we'll see what happens. Let me look at the opening line on this. I haven't looked at that yet.
I would imagine Wichita State is favored by a few.
I'll bet you they are. Because they
beat them at home by what, 9 last month. So I would imagine that they're probably favored by 4.5.
They're favored by 3. Favored by the 3-point road favorites.
Okay. Don't like that line.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's not much else on the plate here other than you'd like to see them start to play better. Anything that they do, this is the exact same place we were last year, which is so frustrating. But anything they do is going to have to happen through the conference tournament. So what are we looking for the rest of the way? That they play better, that they play consistently, that they are respectable and have a chance to beat Memphis at home. UAB, they don't play. They got a big win over North Texas, but Wichita State gets North Texas again. So, like, can you take your chances against some of these top teams? Maybe when you're on national television, both the Memphis and North Texas game will be. So will this game tonight against Charlotte. Just play better so that by the conference tournament, show us that you are capable. No, they do play UAB. My bad. Show us that you're capable of beating anybody in this league so that when the conference tournament comes around, that can be our mini NCAA tournament. I mean, that's it.
Yeah. I can relate this back to my own career. I remember taking a job one time where it was a total rebuild. And I remember my boss told me, look, we don't expect you to just all of a sudden just be incredible. But I'll never forget, my boss said, I just want to see the arrow pointed upward. I just want to see the arrow pointed upward. And if the arrow is pointed upward, then I know that progress is being made. And let's be real, the arrow has not been pointing upward for Wichita State, even though there are a couple of flashes. Like, they did play North Texas close. They played Memphis close on the road. Sure. They didn't win either of those games. You saw some signs of life. But that arrow needs to continue to just be pointed upward. And that's really all you can ask for from now to the end of the regular season, at least, is keep that arrow pointing upward. Get it to a point to where you're entering the conference tournament with momentum, with an opportunity to make a little bit of noise in that conference tournament. At this point, at 1-7 in the American, honestly, that's about all you can ask for, is just get that arrow pointed upward.
Now, you said you had a job building something, not like with your hands, right?
Have you ever known me to build anything?
No, that's what I'm just making sure.
Like, it was a rebuild.
It wasn't like a construction job.
No. In the philosophical sense, it was a rebuild. Literal sense. I appreciate that.
That was a shot fired.
Yeah, I know it was.
We are not the show for you for advice on home improvement.
This is not a DIY show.
No, it is not. Unless your DIY involves like drinking beer, golf, or betting games, we can help there. Otherwise, you're going to have to call somebody.
I told you the other day, it's bad when your wife walks into a room when you're about ready to fix something and she says, honey, why don't I do this?
Yeah.
And it was something I could have done. Like, I know how to do it. But I mean, that there's nothing more emasculating than her saying, honey, why don't you just hand that to me and let me do it? Why don't you go sit down?
Yeah, I don't get that far. But my wife does like to chirp from the, from the gallery. Like, are you sure about that? Are you sure you know how to do that? Like, are you sure? Like, you know what that's not doing? Helping in any way possible. That doesn't help. That's not helpful. Let's go do something else now. No, we know, like, if there are those kinds of things to be done, because I'm gonna have to like figure it out as I go, should probably just be in different places. And that'll be better for everybody. It'll be way better for everybody. I hear you. I hear you. Shockers, they need to get it done. They need to build something. They need to let us know they're building something. And that's momentum into any sort of respectability this season. We'll see if it happens. A good place to start tonight at Charlotte. Get a road win. It's the team you have beaten this year. You know you can do it. Better not lose this game. I don't know what else to say. Like,
I mean, if you're betting it, how do you not take the home dog in Charlotte? With that line, I don't know. That's hard for me to have any kind of appetite on.
They're not good, but metrically, they're better than a team like Tulsa, who Wichita State lost to on the road. So you just don't touch it. That's what you do. This isn't even one to take a swing with, but we'll have it for you tonight on KEYN. Let's see if they can get it turned around. Let's come back tomorrow. Let's have some positive vibes for Shocker basketball. Pregame coverage begins at 5:00 tonight. We're coming right back. Don't go away. More Sports Daily after this.